Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I have said this before, but very rarely, that I have in both my hands I can count the authors who are on my bucket list to always want to speak to. Tonight, my guest is the magnificent John Lesquois. I was so blessed to meet him several years ago in Thriller Fest, and we have had a wonderful friendship since that time. This past week at Thriller Fest, he was awarded the Silver Bullet. We're going to talk about that. But also, he has a new book out called The Fall, introducing, in her really first kind of co-starring role, Rebecca Hardy. John is published by Atria. His books can be found in 22 languages. They're in 75 countries, and he sold well over 10 million copies. Let me just tell you what was said about his new book, The Fall. And this is said by the Washington Post Book World. Lesquois' books are notable for their characterization. Don't read him if all you want is crime and punishment. Family life, children, a genuine humanism are central to what he does. And in another review from the LA Times, Lesquois' tangled scenario is astutely laid out. His stagecraft is enticing. His dodges are artful. His trail seems ensnaring. And, of course, the Huffington Post raves, John Lesquois' writing skills are a national treasure. I could not agree more. Please welcome to Authors on the Air my friend John Lesquois. Good evening,
Hello,
John.
Hello, Pam. It's
Thank
great
you
to be here.
So much. Oh, thank you so much for coming back. You were so genuinely wonderful with your time with me and so generous. Thank you. Congratulations
anytime.
On the new book. It's fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, we spoke just briefly before the show started, and I said, yeah, hey, Rebecca Hardy's really moved up in the world for your character. She now has a co-star in her own book with Business.
Right.
Could you share a little bit about the story with our listeners?
Well, this story was a long time coming because, you know, we followed Rebecca Hardy from the time she was, basically born. And we
right.
see her grow up and go through all of the kind of things that, well, for example, I think all of us who have children have watched them go through. And
yes.
Rebecca, we see her go through her. She's paranoid in high school, and she's unpopular for a while, and she's got to deal with all of these issues that kids go through. And then over the last couple of years, she's shown up as an intern at various other law firms. She decides to go to law school. She becomes a lawyer. And so in this book, it just catches up to her, and it caught up to me, because when I started writing the book, I wasn't planning to have her be the co-author or the co-lawyer.
Co-star.
But instead,
sure.
she took over. She showed up, and she didn't want to get off the page. She said, it's my turn, Dad. And sure enough, she became the person. Yeah.
It's of course, every book I read of yours, and this is no exception, I get almost a knot in my stomach because I'm a very visual person when I read. And so this one is no different. I had the knot in my stomach reading your stories. It seems to me that you take an ordinary person and you say, what if, and
yeah.
How would
what if their
react?
What if their normally ordered
yeah.
world falls apart around them?
Falls apart.
I think that's kind of been the theme that I've worked with my whole career. I just, for some reason, I'm not a superhero kind of guy, I like to write about, I guess, the human condition and about humanity. And what I like to do is follow these people who are very much like you and me, I hope, so that we can identify and empathize with them, and then all of a sudden, they're in a situation that is, fraught with risk and danger. And I just think it's a good way to tell a story.
It sure is. If this book's any indication, well, I've read all your books, so it goes without saying. And I have to say, I am surprised every time I open one of your books. There is never a story that crosses over, other than the characters, which mm-hmm. I look forward to. There's never a story that's, I say to myself, I've heard this one before. And you know I read a lot of books, John. That's my favorite thing to do. So I can't think of when I've read a story like this. It was, my heart was in my throat. It was so
tightly
written.
This is one of those, the plot points that, you know, I knew early on I was going to be talking about was this whole, I can't believe, in fact, how much they reflect what's been going on in this country. Because, realize I wrote this book 2 years ago. And it is now so exactly what is going on with, race relations in this country and with many of the issues that we're all dealing with as these elections are coming up. Yeah. It's just unbelievable.
A rush to judgment and everything else. And boy, if this doesn't really explain that, I don't know what does. It's fantastic.
Right.
So I want to encourage everyone, please run, don't walk, to your nearest bookstore or go to your online retailer. You must get The Fall by Thriller Master John LeSquaw. It is absolutely fantastic. It will blow your socks off, truly.
Thank you. You know, it comes out. Go ahead.
No, you say. Go ahead. You're my guest.
I was going to say it comes out in paperback in about, I think, 2 weeks. So it should be everywhere in the country. And go to your local store and pick it up or else get it online.
I see your books all the time in my local grocery store, too, although I have the hardcover, which I'm saving for when we see each other again. I'm going to bring a suitcase to all my John LeSquaw books so you can sit down.
I'll sign every one of them.
I knew you would. You're so good to me. Thank you. John, you were just at the IPW's Thriller Fest, the annual gathering of all these wonderful mystery and thriller novelists from around the world, mm-hmm. where you were rightfully honored with the Silver Bullet. Will you please share what that was about and what it meant to you?
Well, you know, I have to say it's one of the high points of my whole career. Number one, it's a huge honor to be recognized for, a lifetime achievement in literary and philanthropical endeavors. And, you know, the thing that's amazing about it is I realized that it's not something you plan to get. It's just something that over a lifetime of, you know, trying to be involved with things that you care about, you get involved in a bigger way and then things happen that are really out of your control. One of the things that they pointed out to me, actually, it's funny. I mean, these things that are part of my resume that I don't even know I did. But for example, I was one of the founders of this Authors on the Move situation that we have for the public library system in Sacramento area. And, you know, that has raised over $2 million for the library. And it's something that basically just started because one of the executive directors 12 or 15 years ago asked me if I would call a few of my author friends and see if we could put something together. Well, this has become the kind of the premier literary event in the Central Valley of California. And it's amazing. I didn't try to do anything special, but things happened and it was great.
It does not feel like work either, does it?
It's not work at all.
To be doing those things.
I won when I was young. I was fortunate enough to win a literary award in California for best novel. And, you know, without that award, I don't think I would have gone on to become a novelist because I just didn't believe, I really didn't believe in my heart. I wanted it, of course, but I didn't know if I had the chops, the talent, the wherewithal to get it all together. And because I won that award, it changed my entire worldview. And so when I finally got the opportunity to have a chance to create a similar award at the University of California, Davis, I did. I endowed it with, a large amount of money. And now these kids, every one person a year, wins this big award called the Maurice Prize. And 8 out of 10 of the people who have won it so far have gone on to become traditionally published authors, which I think I'm prouder of them than I am of me. You know, it's just amazing.
And that's okay. And that's really okay because when you do things without looking for any kind of blowback for yourself, they
right.
turn out better than they're supposed to, don't they?
Well, it's just amazing, actually. You know, the way it all extends out beyond anything you had originally envisioned.
It's
and then
true.
It's this kind of amazing synergism that just takes you to a new level, and everything, you know, is better for it. It's tremendous.
And I'm sorry that I wasn't there to see you, but one of these days I will be there to see you again. And but I want to just chat a little bit conversationally, a little bit personally here. It seems you and I share a love of darts.
Darts?
You throw darts. You throw darts. You have a dartboard and
darts.
15. Do you throw at steel tip darts or electronic darts?
No, steel tip darts.
Okay.
Steel tip darts.
All right,
yeah.
John. So one day when I go to California Crime Writers, you and I
yeah.
are going to have a little match, okay? I doubt
okay.
that I can get my darts on board the plane, but I'm not beyond running to a sports store and picking up a new
yeah.
set with some really good flights on them. And we also have a mutual I think you've
That's
heard
really
the
funny.
Throwdown. It is.
Yeah.
I just started playing because a group of us would get together after work on Fridays, and
mm-hmm.
there happened to be a dartboard. I'd never thrown darts before, and it
yeah.
felt cool, which I did for a long time, and started throwing
right.
darts and ended up in a league and had
well,
a great
I
time.
Just,
it was tons of fun.
I just want to warn you, Pam, that I have a dartboard in my office here, and I'm looking at it right now. And
I know where it
you
is.
Know, if you wanna,
I've seen
if you
your video.
If you want to play darts with me, good luck.
Okay, because, John, I've got a steel tip and an electronic board, okay?
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You are serious. Yeah.
I am serious.
Okay.
I need to know the weight of my dart, too, so.
Exactly. 22 grams, right? 22 grams.
Mine are a little bit lighter than that because, you know,
are
I
they?
Have to be careful how. Yeah, I have to because my hands don't grip that well, you know, because I've got to have
okay.
those injuries in my hands. Yeah.
Right.
But also, we also share a love of country music.
We
which
sure
brings
do.
Me to, which brings me to your records. What's
mm-hmm.
new and exciting?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask me that. There's some very, well, one really kind of exciting thing happening. There's a country singer here in Vacaville, California, who's really good. He used to open for Merle Haggard. His name is Tommy
uh-huh.
Lee Moffitt, and he is on a thing called Reverb Nation, where he is, you know, heard all around the world.
I
and
think
he
I've
was
heard
in a recording. You
might
have heard of him. He's got a terrific
he
voice.
Yeah, was he on NPR at one time, do you think?
I don't know that. Don't know.
Okay.
But
all right, I'm
listen
look
to this.
Him up.
This is amazing. He's in a recording studio, and he goes to the same recording studio I have been to. And the
okay.
Engineer is in there, and he's remixing some of my songs. And Tommy is sitting there listening and going, I like this guy. Who is this guy? And the upshot of it, he decided, listening to a lot of my songs, he's coming out with a CD of all of my songs in the next couple of months.
How wonderful.
It's just all my songs. It's wild. I'm going, really? Are you kidding me? So he just goes, no, man, you're like a real songwriter. I went, cool.
So
I always thought I was.
Will
you
be playing
you know.
On any of them? Will you be
no,
playing
no,
on
I'm
any of the tracks
it's,
with them?
No, it's his record.
But you're going to get cred,
record.
Obviously.
Oh,
you're getting
well, of
cred.
Of course, they're all my songs. Yeah. It's mind-boggling.
Oh, my God.
So wouldn't
hey,
that be wild
this...
if after all this time, you know, I actually had a couple of hit records? That'd be pretty wild.
Wouldn't that be great? It would be great.
It'd be
See,
so cool.
And then the angst of dreaming up a book would just go away. You'd leave it all behind and become a country western singer in full time, right?
Oh, that is,
no,
well,
no,
you know, I think
so.
Country western singer is not going to be me. But country western songwriter, I can see.
There you can. How wonderful.
Yeah.
What an exciting thing. That's so
It is
fun.
Cool. It's
That's
very
so
cool.
Fun.
I have to tell you. Yeah.
I bet it is. Now, I also know that you love to cook and that you have a few very special recipes that you even share on your website. What is
yeah.
your – because you have a pork tenderloin recipe that I love. because I have
actually
that recipe
got printed up back when Gourmet Magazine was still in existence. That was one of their chosen recipes, and it appeared in Gourmet, which just thrilled me to death.
In 1985, it appeared in Gourmet, and
yeah,
that recipe
how do you know
still
that?
Stands because I do my research. You know that I do, but I have to tell you that recipe stands the test of time because knowing you were coming on, I made that, and it was wonderful. It was fabulous.
It's delicious. Yeah,
it's delicious. It really is. Now,
yeah.
I know you also make a paella, and you
I
have
do.
To know that I was born and raised in Miami, and we have, you know, 85% of our population is Hispanic, and most of it's Cuban.
Sure.
So
right.
I've had some killer paella.
Right.
What do you throw in yours?
Oh, my God, everything but the kitchen sink.
Right?
I throw in chorizo. I start with chorizo and chicken wings.
Uh-huh.
And that gives it that kind of really savory, delicious, meaty overtone or undertone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I just put in, I put in octopus and squid and whitefish and clams and mussels if they got them and saffron with the rice and stir it all
yes.
up. And then, you know, half
Let
an hour
it
later,
sit there
it's
and
delicious.
Just, yeah, wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds fabulous. I used to go to my friend's grandparents would. One of the businesses they had was a seafood business, and so they always had stone crabs. Now, if you've been in Miami, which I know you have,
oh, yeah.
and if you've ever eaten Joe Stone Crabs, which you probably have, then you know it's one of the best things in the world. So they use stone crabs in with these giant
in their
prawn
paella, huh?
And oh yes, oh my God, it was so wonderful. All the shells
That's
off,
great.
It was just fabulous. Yeah. So you and I share a love of cooking also, which is wonderful,
It's good.
Tell me what's next for you, John Lesquois, since you really write a little bit ahead of time. So your book for next year is already, or this year, later this year is already ready, or is the fall your 2016 book?
No, the fall was my 2015-16 book.
15.
And then,
okay.
Yeah. And then the new one that's coming out is a standalone book. It's no Dismas Hardy, no Abe Lyttsky, no Wyatt
really?
Hunt. All new characters.
Really?
Yes. Set in San Francisco. And the name of the book is Fatal. And it comes out in January of 2017.
Wonderful. Now, will you ever do another Hunt Club book?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, the problem is I invent these characters and then they become part of the cosmos that I'm trying to write. So it started out, it was just going to be like this Dismas Hardy guy, and Abe Lyttsky then shows up. Then Abe Lyttsky kind of takes over for a couple of books. Then we get all back to Hardy and Lyttsky, and then Wyatt Hunt shows up in his own book. And now Wyatt Hunt is pretty much part of the Hardy books. And now Rebecca wants another shot at, you know, getting another trial. And it's like these things keep, you know, multiplying like mushrooms. And
I'd love to see Rebecca and Hunt together. I think that would be a really interesting combination. I'm just putting in my 2 cents.
Yes, well, we shall see what happens.
Well, you never know. Of course, last we left off with Mr. Hunt, he was kind of busy. He was entangled, so we'll see what happens. You know, who knows?
Exactly.
Let's talk about writing, John. You know, you are the master of the written word. There is no doubt about it. Everybody admits it. Everybody knows it. Can't be shy about it. Do you like teaching the newbies when you get them?
Do I like what?
Do you like teaching to aspiring novelists? Do you like teaching aspiring novelists?
You know, I like giving individual classes about individual techniques, very, very focused stuff. For example, during the ITW week last week, I did a class on dialogue. And I found that to be very, very good. I thought most of the people really liked it. I think I really had something to say about dialogue. And I think I said it and it got through to people. So that's great. But on another kind of a larger sense, I really think that to a great degree, writing can't be taught. Techniques can be refined, but, you know, the way people tell a story is something that is kind of very personal and very private, and some people can do it and other people can't do it. And I don't know if you can teach it.
Well, see, that was my next question.
Yeah.
My next question to you was, I know I can't write. I mean, I have a nonfiction book in me, but I don't have a fiction book in me. There's just no way. I have too many voices in my head, and I'd never be able to figure it out, and I don't know. I don't understand the craft of it all. But someone who keeps writing and keeps writing and keeps putting out these books, and, you know, whether it's probably most likely independently published, and they're just not moving anywhere.
Yeah.
Does there come a point when you say, this is not for you? I mean, would you ever say that to someone? How do you know?
Well, yeah.
How do you know?
Well, the fact is, you know, if you keep going, I'm all for just keeping going. I mean, as long as that's what you want to do, keep trying. You know, who knows? You might just turn a corner one day and be a different person and be able to, you know, tell any story you want to tell. And, you know, it's just the thing is that not everybody can do everything. I, for example, could probably not be a painter. I do not have the skill to know how to, you know, put stuff down and make it look good. My wife is a brilliant painter. And she paints, anything she paints or even sketches looks like incredible. And and she could give me lessons from now until, you know, 2025. And I would still not be able to draw a picture of a dog.
Right.
You go, I don't know if that's a dog or whatever it could be, you know.
Right.
But she can, you know, do nuance, and she can do shadow and perspective and all these crazy things. Well, I think writing is the same way. I think some people can write, some people can't write. And there's no shame in not being able to write. A lot of people can't write. Maybe most people.
Right. I often hear from people who say, I just don't understand. I'm now on my 10th book, and I think it's really great, and, you know, people seem to like it, but I can't sell any of them. And
that's a whole different story. I mean, that's the business of writing.
But I don't mean the business part of it.
You know,
no one likes it. My friends like my story, but nobody else does. And I said,
at that point, you might just decide you're doing it for yourself.
Right. And then you go on and you go and you find what you're good at and you continue to write as a hobby, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone ever say that. They just say, keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. But,
well, you know, it's an unpolitically correct thing to say because everybody believes that they can do everything. But the fact of the matter is, not to talk about real things here on the radio, but the fact of the matter is that not everybody can do everything.
Right.
You know, and I think it's pretty smart of people to understand what they can't do. And if anybody, God forbid, writes 10 whole books and they can't get published and nobody wants to read them, well, maybe they're doing something they can't do.
Right.
Just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's a hard thing to hear, and I would never say that to anyone because I'm not a writer, so what do I know?
Mm-hmm.
I know what I know from listening to the people that I speak with on the radio and the books that I read, but how am I to know? Because some books are bestsellers and I don't like them. So, you know, I'm not a judge of anything except for the book I'm reading right then and there. So, I would never presume. Do you look back at your first books and see a difference in your writing to this book?
Yes. Dramatic.
Really?
Yeah. Dramatic.
I'm surprised.
I mean, my first book was a literary book that had nothing to do with any crime and very little to do with plot. And it was, you know, well received. It won this big literary award. All of that was good. But when I look at it now, I'm kind of embarrassed by it because it doesn't really have much of a plot and it doesn't, you know, doesn't go where I would now take it if I were writing the same book. But then I wrote a couple of Sherlock Holmes books, which were really fun and I'm proud of, but they don't sound like me anymore. It's really when I started writing the Dismas Hardy stuff that I started going, I can do different things in a different way and have a little more fun. And then
well,
I
you
think,
said that was your alter ego. You told me last time we spoke that they're your alter ego. So maybe that's what it is. You that was your voice very specifically speaking in those books.
Exactly.
It's interesting to me. But now you're channeling Rebecca, so I'm really thrilled about that, I have to tell you, because it's nice to see kind of the younger generation coming up here. In terms of craft, John, how important is the actual craft of writing?
It's the whole ballgame.
Is it?
It's the whole ballgame.
Do you have to have only – can you get by with strong characters and a not-so-great plot line – or a great plot line and not so great characters? Or do you really, really have to have both?
You have to have both, because if you have great characters and no plot, then nothing's happening. You know what I mean? But if you have a great plot, but you don't care about who it's happening to, that just doesn't work. It's just like, that's not happening.
Right.
So
nobody
you need to have both. And I have to say, the craft, that is knowing how to use words correctly, is what writing is all about. And if you can't take the time to learn the craft, why are you even bothering to try to write? It's like trying to be a carpenter without knowing how to swing a hammer.
This is true. Makes sense.
Makes no sense to me.
When you begin writing, do you work? I know you have serious characters, but you know you have a standalone coming out. Fatal is coming.
Yeah.
Did you work first on the character, or did you have the thread of the plot line first?
No, actually, this was very interesting. I just started writing a scene, and I kept following that scene until it developed into a book. I mean, it's pretty remarkable the way it happened, because most books are not that way for me. Most books, I get a general idea, and I try to write to that idea. In this case, I wanted to do something. I really just wanted to break away from the normal characters that I'd been using. I wasn't bored with them. I just thought they needed a break. So I just said, you know, I'm going to write a different book completely. So I sat down and started writing a different book. And sure enough, by the time I was done, it was pretty darn different.
So your storyline came first, and then you plugged in the characters that needed to go into
the
story?
No.
Okay.
What happened was had two characters right at the beginning, two women, who were talking about stuff. And the stuff is what became the book.
Oh.
I don't know how to say it better than that. You'd have to read the book, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
It's
I
pretty powerful.
I understand exactly what you're saying. What you're saying.
Wow.
Would this book be something you'd think about doing a series with, or this is it? It is a standalone for sure.
This is the killer, Pam. This is it's going to kill you, because this is what happens. So I finish this book and I go, boy, that was murder to write. You know, no pun intended, but I'm going, this is
right.
That was a lot of work, because I mean, I had to invent everything again, the whole wheel over again.
Right.
Very different whole thing. So I get done with a book, and I hand it into my agent, and he goes, I love this book. I'm going, I'm so glad. He goes, boy, you know, I really would love to see another one with these people. And I'm going, wait a minute, I got five other books I got to write first, to put Dismas Hardy back in the lead, to put Abe Glitzky back in the lead, to put Rebecca back in the lead, Wyatt Hunt. I mean, you know, I got a million books here with different characters. And Barney's talking to me, and he's going, you really ought to do a sequel to this. This is a killer. And I'm going,
that. So who knows? That may be in 5 years from now we see a sequel of that, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, what I'm writing right now is the book after that one. And, I mean, literally half an hour ago I was writing the book that's coming out in whatever it is, 2018. So, it kind of never stops. But the new one after Fatal is a Dismas Hardy book again.
Would you ever consider, for instance, because Fatal appealing to your agent and your editor, would you ever consider doing a novella to tide over your readers?
Golly.
Or is that
not your style? I think I work hard enough. I don't have any desire to sit down and write a damn novella. I hear about these people who go, I'm just going to whip together a novella. I go, are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, that would be at least a month of, like, agony. So, anyway.
Are you still do you still love to see? I know that you tell me that you get frustrated when the word won't come. I know you squeeze your baseballs and you throw the darts and you play with all the gadgets in your desk and everything else.
Yeah,
so,
you're right.
So, but do you love it when the words start to flow?
Well, when the words start to flow, it's great. You know, it's great. Today I had a great day. I had 8 pages. And considering I just got back from the East Coast on vacation, to be able to sit down and put out 8 pages is kind of special. So today was a good day, and I wrote a couple of good, nice scenes. So we'll see.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Mr. John Lesqua, Silver Bullet Award nominee, I am honoree, excuse me, and best-selling author. You've had, I think, 16 books have hit the number one on the New York Times bestseller list. You're internationally acclaimed. I'm so honored that you are my friend and that you call me friend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And I love having you on the show, and I'm so grateful that you took time from your book to chat with me for a little while.
Yeah,
thank you
so much. I always love it. Thank you.
Ah, thanks, Don. You're terrific. Thank you so much. Have a good night, okay?
You too.
Good night.
Take care next
thanks,
time.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
Good night. All righty, bye-bye. Monday I'll be speaking to F. Paul Wilson, who is the master of the horror thriller. You're going to love hearing from him. Have a great weekend. Pick up John Lesqua's book, The Fall. And thanks for being with me. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.